This is the Baller on a Budget podcast. I'm Eileen, your host and your favorite baller on a budget. This isn't just a podcast about money management. We talk about all the juicy bits that surround money, the taboo, the heartbreak, the struggle, and the ridiculous moments we all face when it comes to saving some extra cash. Ready? Let's go. Everyone, and welcome to episode 3 of the Baller on a Budget podcast. It is January 2021. Happy New Year, guys. Today we have a special treat. This is our very first guest of the podcast. We have Camilo Maldonado of The Finance Twins. So The Finance Twins is an online blog that Camilo and his brother Francisco started, and they provide people with the resources to take charge of their finances, whether it is investing, budgeting, or credit. And I actually found them through Instagram. I'm so glad that we are here today to discuss all the things. So Camilo, I'm so glad to have you on here.
Eileen, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited. Happy New Year. Thank you for having me. I am also so glad that we were able to connect on Instagram.
Real quick, I wanted to ask you, do you have a full-time job besides from the Finance Twins, or is this your full-time job?
This is my full-time job. So in addition to the Finance Twins, I actually also own and run a second website, a second business. But between these two businesses, I stay super busy. The second website is not related to personal finance. It's a contact lens price comparison website. So I half my life is spent in the vision space, helping people save money on contact lenses. And the second half is here with you, helping people make sense of the financial world, which is so confusing, and it doesn't need to be.
Okay, so how did you transition to doing this, just the contact lens and the Finance Twins? All of this, basically, these are your two main things. What was your background? Tell us your life story. Spill the tea.
So I'm turning 32 soon. So there's 32 years of history to compact in a minute for you. But essentially, I was born in Colombia, South America. And I have a twin brother and an older brother. And so we were super fortunate because my mom was a U.S. citizen because she was born in Virginia. So my parents just made the decision to bring the family to the U.S. and everything was great. And then disaster kind of struck for us. My father died from brain cancer. Mm-hmm. And we went from having this dream life here in the U.S. to all of a sudden being thrust into this life of poverty because my parents basically used every penny they had to pay for his treatments to try to keep him alive. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of a big roller coaster growing up, right? And I basically always had this, you know, this burning desire to help, to change the circumstances that, you know, basically the hand that we were dealt at no fault of our own. And so I worked really, really, really hard in school and I was able to basically be accepted to the best universities in the country and go on a scholarship and full financial aid. And it basically changed the trajectory of my life. So we fast forward, I ended up graduating from two Ivy League universities and was able to have experience working on Wall Street and basically went from being this broke college kid to making six figures at 22. Woo! And I knew that I had been so fortunate, just felt this luck and this gratitude and just wanted to figure out a way to help other people because not everyone gets the same lucky breaks that I did. And so that was kind of the catalyst for starting the Finance Twins. And the Finance Twins is really people's way to really feel like they can get a handle on the financial situation. And now it's just more important than ever with COVID and the unemployment rates and all the suffering that's really happening in this country. You know, we feel empowered and we feel that our mission has never been more important. So that's really what we're doing and why we're here.
That I feel like all of that is so important. I feel like your story is just a story that we don't often hear, but it is a very common story. It is really strange, you know, like that. How come we don't talk about like these things about like a lot of people coming as immigrants, facing this hardship, facing loss, and then having to like financially recover? So I think it's amazing that you did what you did. You stayed true to your resolve ever since, you know, like those unfortunate events happened in your family. I am so sorry, by the way. And so, I mean, speaking of what's going on in the world right now and like, you know, just struggle in general, how did 2020 treat you, by the way? Like, I don't know, work, financially, personally, whatever you want to share. How was that crazy year for you?
Me personally, I feel very fortunate because from a financial perspective, I did fine. And I think it basically really drove home the point of the reason why investing really is so important and the reason why financial literacy is so important. Because if you are able to put yourself in a place where you have this emergency fund, or you're just in a place where you're financially secure, then events like this are much less disruptive. I understand that it's not that easy. It's not like, yo, you just work hard and you'll make it. But if you give yourself at least a chance to improve your situation and you understand the tools and resources to give yourself the best shot to reach it, then the next time something like this happens, you'll be in a better place to be able to potentially withstand it. What do you think was your biggest takeaway from 2020?
In 2019, I was a super optimistic person, and I was like, I can manifest anything if I just like set my mind to it. And then 2020 was like that hard slap in the face of reality, saying that, no, honey, like sometimes there are so many obstacles in the way that are just like so much bigger than just having like sheer willpower to overcome it. Like kind of like what you said earlier about sometimes you're just not going to be prepared. And I think it's so important that, you know, like the emphasis on just like at least financial preparedness will get you through those things. Maybe not emotionally, you know, like I don't think any amount of money is going to compensate for any amount of loss, especially with all the loss that so many people in 2020 experienced. But the financial part will definitely alleviate a lot of the symptoms. All right. So it is the beginning of a new year. And I mean, with you working in the finance world, I bet you're surrounded by all the New Year's resolutions involving money and, you know, things like paying off debt, saving up an emergency fund, et cetera, is going to be a goal for a lot of people this year, especially since so many of us were hit so hard by the financial crisis of 2020. It's made people reflect on how to better prepare for emergency situations like this in the future. And we've also learned that emergency funds only last so long. So I think we do need to start looking into other avenues to financially safeguard ourselves. With that being said, I mean, I'm pretty sure a lot of people know that like investing is one of the quickest vehicles to building wealth. But during this time, how can we get into investing at a time like this where money is like scarce, where we don't have, you know, I can't put down like $10,000 away just to invest. So like, how could I get into investing right now?
Yeah, and that's a really good question. And so many people, when I ask them, why aren't you investing yet? They'll say, because I only have $500, or because I only can save a couple hundred bucks a month. And they don't realize that you can start investing with as little as $5. And so when you say, how can I start investing? If you have a job, just literally Google how to open an IRA. And within 5 minutes, you can have an account set up. You can transfer even, you know, $20. And after a couple of days, once the money's in there, you can start investing that quickly. And so you don't need to be intimidated. You do not need to be rich to start investing. The most important part is just to start.
Okay, so then I have a question, because you got me at like $5. So to clarify for people, let's do an example, a working example. I put away $5. Am I going to wake up in like 10 years and then be a millionaire? Or like, what exactly is the basic practice of investing? Is it something where like you just put a lump sum in up front and then you wake up a millionaire one day? Or is this something where you're going to constantly have to put away money? Like, how does this work? Explain to us.
No, you will not wake up in 20 years and be a millionaire.
Damn.
I wish it worked that way, but the $5 is really to start building that habit of investing. The way that you will invest and will want to prepare for your future is by investing on a regular basis. So if you put away $5 a month for a few months and then you get into this cadence and it doesn't feel scary anymore, then you can increase it to $10 a month and then 20, and eventually you can increasingly invest more and more, but you'll want to incrementally invest on a regular basis and increase how much money you have invested, because ultimately investment returns can vary widely and you can have really great years of returns, but ultimately the majority of the money that you'll have at the end is what you've put into it. And so you really have to remember that investing is not a one-time thing. It's not just about putting in a lump sum. But $5 is, you can get started to build that habit, start exercising that investment muscle, because it is a muscle. And the more you do it, the more comfortable you will feel. And after a few years of it, like for example, in my case, I've been investing now for over 10 years. Now it's like second nature. It's just like, oh, it's the first day of the month, time to invest more money. So you just have to exercise that investment muscle.
Oh, so okay. So to me, you guys, it sounds like very similar to practicing good habits about saving on a regular basis, right? Correct me if I'm wrong.
It's the same exact thing. And a lot of people, I think, when they say saving, they kind of mean investing, because they'll say, how do I save for retirement? And the answer is you don't. Like, save for retirement, you're not going to be able to retire if all you're doing is saving. You've got to invest for retirement. And so it's literally the same exact principle. You've got to put a little bit away every single month and put it to work in the stock market so that your money can start working for you. Otherwise, it'll just sit there, basically essentially the same as leaving it underneath your mattress, just collecting dust. It's not going to earn interest. So you really have to put it to work, and we're investing for the future. We're not saving for the future.
Well, all right, y'all, that is the green light. Speaking of all, you know, like the meat and potatoes of like all that investing. So Camilo just launched his course, How to Start Investing. And I just recently took it. So it was really, really surprisingly easy to understand. It made me feel way less intimidated, because I feel like for the longest time, everybody has been screaming at me to start investing and I just didn't know where to start. So I was like, I will just do it tomorrow. And, you know, like the way that your course was structured, it was super easy to understand. It wasn't long. It was just like very straightforward. So I feel like super confident to do it. So I am motivated to start my investment portfolio, and I'm actually planning on using the you guys, okay, here's a secret. I'm planning on using the leftover of my survival check to open it. And y'all, I am saying survival check because, you know, that was not a stimulus check. What was that going to stimulate? That was a survival check. Okay, so I'm putting away the rest of my stimulus check into starting my portfolio. Okay, so that's what I'm doing. And speaking of which, Camilo, for all the people who are planning to use their stimulus checks to invest, why would you recommend stocks and bonds over like other investments like high yield savings or like a money market account or like cryptocurrency like Bitcoin? Even though you can't even spend, like, what is it? Bitcoin's like $35,000 now. So maybe that's not a good comparison, but you know, why stocks?
But you can invest in Bitcoin, because you can buy fractional shares of or pieces of cryptocurrencies. But why stocks? Because historically, stocks have been proven to be one of the most effective asset classes in places so that you can invest your money and grow it over time on a risk-adjusted basis. And when you talk about high-yield savings, money market accounts, those accounts just don't earn enough money to make a big difference over many years. If you're talking about a high interest savings account, right now yields have dropped. So, and yields are just a different word for interest rates, but they're a little bit higher than 1%. 1% per year, that's not going to do anything for you, right? And so people are calling it the stimulus check. The only thing the stimulus check stimulated in me was tears, because I was crying because I knew how many people are suffering. And so you need to invest in stocks, because that is over long periods of time, let's say, you know, 20, 30, 40 years, that is going to be, you know, that's historically the most effective way to save. And that is still what, you know, experts and myself believe is going to still be the most effective way to save and invest for retirement over the next 20, 30, 40 years.
So if at this point you have learned that the survival check is basically nothing, and if you can spare it, try to put some of that money, you know, just build the habit. Open your account with me, you guys. Like, I'm doing it. So thank you for creating this course. First, yeah, thank you. I went down this Google rabbit hole of like trying to learn about like investing, and I was so overwhelmed. So when literally I took your course, I felt like, wow, like it really is basically that straightforward. So yeah, like, love the course.
Thank you for taking it. And I think you just really hit at the core of what I was trying to do. And basically when I created it, I had my mom in my mind, where she had never invested a dollar in her life and she was intimidated and thought it was confusing. And with my experience, I just knew that wasn't the case. So I just tried to make it as simple, take out all the nonsense and fluff that you usually get when it comes to learning to invest, so that you can get started and just not feel intimidated to do something that is so important that we just all need to do basically for the rest of our lives.
Yeah. I also want to thank you for pricing the course so affordably. I think it's super important that, you know, now more than ever, all of this information on investing needs to be not only accessible, but also easy to digest. I think you did a really good job at like combining both of those things into your course. Because look, this info is going to be highly, you know, like sought after during, this is a time where a lot of people's financial security has been rattled by current events. So it is good. I feel like I've seen like a lot of investment, like boot camps or whatever, like out there for thousands of dollars. So I'm just really glad that, you know, it's priced out. When you think about it, I mean, the course is 179, right?
Yep, that's right.
When you think about it, you guys are taking this information in this course, and you're obviously going to invest way more over time. Your money is going to make a return even more so than what you put in, right? So honestly, this is probably the most affordable course out there that's going to provide this kind of information in a really easy to understand and non-intimidating way. So it's really cool that you kept that accessible for people like us, because investment can't just be limited to rich people. It can't. You know, we have to start being able to break into that area and start, you know, building our own wealth so that things can be a little bit more on a level playing ground. It's so great that this information, you're making this accessible. Like, there's just too much wealth inequality here. And the reality is that in the U.S., it has created a gap between classes.
Totally.
You know, between the working class and the ruling class, and between, you know, racial groups. I mean, in 2020, there was a lot of online dialogue about racism and how our systems use racism to keep minority groups oppressed in a variety of ways. And, you know, like having that financial education and know-how is so critical to really shape the world and make more room for Black, Indigenous, and people of color. So for you, I mean, you've been in the personal finance world for a number of years, and you've seen it all, I'm pretty sure. Like, you've worked with a lot of super rich people. Did you work on Wall Street? You worked on Wall Street, right?
I did, yeah. I started my career as an investment banking analyst, so I met my fair share of fat cats.
So, I mean, like, with that being said, you've seen the class divide. You've seen, you know, like, the racial...
Oh my gosh, I've lived it.
Yeah. Right?
I lived it. I grew up in central Minnesota, very, very humble, low-income household, and then I went to Harvard. I was just surrounded by the top 1%, so I've lived it. I've seen it, and the gap in income between genders, between between race car drivers, you know, I lived it.
Yeah.
I've lived this inequality. I've seen it, and I've experienced it. And you know, one thing that I'm really proud of with our course specifically is that the majority of the students are either women or Black, Indigenous people of color, which is really, really amazing.
So, I mean, your experience with like classism and racism, how does that modify the way in which you teach people about personal finance? Because like, I hear so many different like styles of the way that like personal finance is taught to people. And you obviously see the people who are giving this advice, they come from different backgrounds. And it is just, it really goes to show, it highlights so much of the bias and the inequality and the unfairness in the finance world. So how does that change the way that you teach people about this?
If you look at someone who comes from a family that historically has been very wealthy, they learn these personal finance lessons at home growing up. They learn about budgeting. They learn about investing. When they get their first job, their parents help them set up their benefits so that they choose the right health insurance and they choose the right 401k and the right way to put money in and all that stuff. And so we're basically democratizing access to that information. And our Instagram channel is a perfect example of that, where people come to our profile on our page and we're giving them those tips. We're saying, hey, by the way, this is what a Roth IRA is and why you need one, or this is how a 401k match works and those types of things. And if you're not learning those lessons at home, it's okay. And we're empowering people and giving them the confidence to really make those decisions and changes, which will really allow them to change the trajectory of their life and, you know, their family's future.
You know what? I wish you guys were in existence back when I lived with my parents, because, you know,
we were in existence. We were just, you know, little little high school punks.
I mean, yeah, you're high school punks, but you weren't like the finance twins. Yeah,
no,
you guys
just
were
kidding.
Like, you know, you weren't there. But yeah, like I wish like a resource like you guys was available and accessible back then. Like when I was growing up, I saw my parents, you know, they were immigrants from the Philippines, and they didn't really have a lot of like financial know-how. And so it was really strange growing up in that household where, first of all, scarcity was a big thing. I was constantly worrying about whether or not we could have, you know, the bills paid for, right? And it was just really weird. It was surreal for me as a kid to like look at my parents and see them struggle and like, you know, like those are the people you look up to, right? And it's scary to know that like my parents, who are my protectors in this world, don't know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting because when I grew up, I remember the conversations between my parents, right? And they would say things like, you know, oh, we got like financial advice from like our really rich friend, and they said that we just need to invest like $100,000 into this thing and then we'll make it big. And I remember, like, as a kid, I was like, we don't have $100,000 to just hand over like that. So like a lot of these financial educators, they're giving this advice that is just like not applicable to a lot of people, right? Like there's either the basic budgeting tips, like don't ever eat at restaurants, never treat yourself, you know, you have to work 3 side jobs and you have to buy your house in all cash, which is like, it's not realistic for people like me or my parents.
Never use credit cards, never get sick, don't go to the doctor, don't go to the hospital, just die at home. It's
ridiculous. And it's just like, okay, well, those are things that like basically everybody has to go through. And unfortunately, predominantly Black, Indigenous, people of color communities, they are hit by poverty, I feel like, the hardest in the U.S. due to the inequality in like education, financial education, career opportunities, work opportunities, wages, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of financial advice that is given by these financial professionals, it just does not address wealth inequality, class inequality, systemic racism, and it leaves a lot of people without helpful solutions, like my parents. Like, this is, I'm talking about people like my parents and my family and even me. So, I mean, you guys all know about like the whole stimulus check situation. If you're listening to this in like 2030, or God forbid, if like the country hasn't just like exploded into flames and we're not here anymore. But if you guys are listening to this, just to summarize the whole stimulus check situation, early in 2020, we were given $1,200 to survive the pandemic. And then 9 months later, we were given a mere $600. At this point, I'm just kind of like, the $600 is not really going to do much for me. So I feel like, yeah, fortunately, I am in the position where I can use a portion of that stimulus check to start my investing, right? So so with that being said, what is the best way that we can like leverage these scraps, aka the stimulus check, to get ahead of our financial goals? Like, I know a lot of people are going to wind up having to use basically most of it towards necessities like rent and basic living expenses. But if people are able to spare, like, what is a strategy that you can tell people of, like, how we can strategically stretch this stimulus check to get ahead of our financial goals?
So the first thing I'll say, I'm super tempted to just take off my financial educator hat for a second and say this year has been really hard. 2020 was so hard for all of us. And if you want to reach any of these goals, you need to make sure that you're in the right space emotionally and physically. And so I think a really good use of this would probably be to invest in your emotional well-being. And so if you're someone who hasn't had access to a therapist, one really good use of the stimulus, in my opinion, would probably be to, you know, speak to someone about your mental health and make sure that you're in a good place, because, you know, that $600, you could use it to invest and, you know, do what you're doing, which is phenomenal. And I highly encourage that, but you might get even more dividends if you're using it to speak to someone a few sessions and really getting in a place to tackle some bigger goals in your life and challenges. And that might be paying dividends for many, many years to come. Don't get too crazy about, you know, investing every single dollar and maximizing everything. Just take a second to recognize that this has been so hard, and making sure that you're taking care of your physical and mental health, because you need to be really healthy so that you can really, really focus on these other goals over a long period of time. Because investing, like I said, is a lifelong journey, and you don't want to just burn out in like 1 year and never do it again. You want to make sure you're in a place where you can do it sustainably for decades to come.
Yeah. This year has been stressful. I totally agree with you that like people need to take care of themselves first and like not feel this shame, right, to spend the stimulus check a certain way, because it's like a lot of people are going to think like, well, I don't know when is the next time we're going to even get a stimulus check, so I have to really use this wisely. Take care of yourself first, because I feel like, you know, the first piece of financial advice everyone's going to give you is like, if somebody gives you a lump sum of money, what are you going to do with it? And like, you know, usually the first answer is like, you have to like take that money and like make it make more money, right? But it's like, how are you going to make the right decisions if you are emotionally not in the right headspace to do so? So it's, thank you for making space for mental health, because I feel like that is just the part that like we don't take into account for. Like, I feel like, you know, wealthier people do not have that empathy towards people who are working class, basically. Totally. And they don't have the empathy for, like, people are burnt out. The reason why people make poor financial decisions that they don't want to necessarily make in the right headspace, if they were, we wind up making these impulsive or these bad decisions with money because we're burnt out, we're overwhelmed, we're stressed out, and you feel like you're backed up into a corner and you have to make the right decision now, right? So it's like, obviously, given those circumstances, you're probably not going to make the most sound decision. So yeah, like, I 100%, dude, like, I agree with you. Mental health is first. You guys, I really back that. But honestly, dude, I'm pissed because the government failed us this year. And I feel like with all that we've learned about, with racial inequality, with income gaps, you know, with the class divide, we are overdue for a systemic change. And I feel like there has been a big thing right now where people are really waking up to the fact that you're not poor and you're not struggling because you didn't work hard enough. And I feel like that is the biggest lie that this world teaches us, is that if we are poor, it's because we just didn't work hard enough. A lot of people are working like 3 jobs and they're still struggling. Totally. Right? So if what is your perspective on, like, billionaires and wealthy people being such a big part of this problem? Because, like, for me, I personally believe in, like, eat the rich, you know, tax the rich. I don't think that people should, no one person should possess billions of dollars. Like, that doesn't make sense to me. But I don't know, what are your thoughts on that? Especially with you having worked with a lot of rich people. Is there a perspective I'm not seeing here? Are we not seeing something?
No, I mean, I think people, at a very basic human instinctual nature, will always look out for themselves first. And I think the results we're seeing are the result of people exploiting the system to their benefit. So ultimately, you know, things do need to change so that billionaires of the world do actually end up paying taxes. There's been study after study after study that has shown that trickle down economics, which basically the premise is, if we cut taxes for companies and the ultra wealthy, they will create more jobs, and those jobs will, you know, that income will trickle down to the working class. And it's just been proven that's just not true. That rich people get a tax break, and you know what they do? They just buy more assets for themselves, and they just keep getting richer and richer and richer. So those things need to change. It's not something that will change over time, it's not something that will change overnight. It needs to change over time because, you know, we're going to get to a point where 99% of people are living below the poverty line, and then, you know, push comes to shove, something has to change because that's just not sustainable. I don't know, you know, innovation is a driver of economic growth, and you can't innovate if half, you know, the majority of your country is hungry. So things will need to change.
No, I 100% agree with that. And wasn't there something, I don't know the exact numbers, and don't quote me on this, but I feel like you might know more about this than me, but wasn't it last year part of, like, that first stimulus or something, there was like an economic relief package or something? Like, it was like a package for, like, the big corporate businesses where they were supposed to have, like, made more jobs, and what they wound up doing was, like, pocketing the money and then, like, still laying a bunch of people off. Do you know about that?
Yeah, there's a lot of examples about that where companies were receiving, I think a lot of people were giving flack to airlines because airlines took in a bunch of federal money and then laid off a bunch of workers and other industries. So, you know, that goes back to the point of people, you know, kind of looking out for themselves first, and they do it because the system is set up in a way that there's no consequence for people to do that. And so in a way, it's almost encouraged.
So I guess with all that being said, how do you recommend that, like, normal people who make under 6 figures should participate in stocks? Is there a way for us to participate in a way that actually creates systemic change instead of just feeding the rich more money and perpetuating this system that is so easy to be exploited once you reach a certain, you know, bracket of wealth? Is there a way that we can change the world from investing, or is that just not possible?
Well, I think it is.
Are we
possible.
All just corrupt if we invest?
I don't think we are corrupt if we invest. I think enacting change is possible over time, but I think in order to have change, you need to have a seat at the table. And so from a very basic fundamental level, when you invest in stocks, you're buying a piece of a company. So when you buy a share of XYZ company, you're now an owner of XYZ company. And the more working class people that are investing and getting a seat at the table, the more their voices can be heard when they come together and collectively say, like, we want to choose someone, this person, to be on the board of directors, or we want this person to have a position in management. And when all of the wealth right now is concentrated in very few people's hands, obviously, even if every single working class person, you know, got all their money together and put it into a company, they still wouldn't be able to compete with the billionaires of the world because there's so much inequality. But over time, as the working class does start to generate more wealth, they'll be able to slowly enact change. But the first thing you have to do is just start investing so you start to get a seat at the table. And avoiding the system altogether, in my opinion, is kind of like shooting yourself in the foot, because you'll be missing out on the growth of this economic motor. And at the same time, when you're not earning the gains that you could be to providing for yourself and your loved ones, you're not going to put yourself in a position to be able to have a seat at the table when those discussions are being held.
So basically, what I heard with my selective hearing is, for example, like a corporate business like Amazon, in a perfect world, what if we got everybody to invest in like Amazon stocks? Would we be able to like take over the business and just like kick Jeff Bezos out of it? Is that what you're saying? Is that the way we create change?
I mean, I guess in theory, anything is possible, but obviously he owns so much of the company. That's why he's, you know, basically the richest person in the world, because he has such a big part of that business. But what I'm saying is, your question is, what should normal people do? They should invest. Start investing now. Invest in index funds. Just start investing in stocks so that you can start building wealth, and so that a larger share of the ownership of these companies is the working class and not just the elite.
I mean, yeah, all of that makes sense. I just wish that, you know, my little Amazon scenario could actually possibly play out. You know, like, I wish that there was like a quick way that we could just kind of bridge the gap of wealth inequality in this country, and then at the same time, like, serve us peasants, I guess, who are just trying to beat the system at its own game. But I mean, yeah, you're right.
You and I both come from countries where there's a ton of income inequality, right? And you're talking about your parents coming from the Philippines, I'm coming directly from Colombia. In those societies, the haves and the have-nots are so obvious. And the U.S. is basically slowly heading that way, where there's going to be no middle class. You're either rich or you're broke. And that's kind of the direction that things are headed currently, which is a shame. And hopefully things, you know, change in a fundamental way so that the system isn't basically so not stacked in the favor of just the elite. But that is, in my view, kind of what we're seeing. It's starting to feel really familiar because I come from a country where that's the case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I feel like the Philippines too, is the same way. I feel like a lot of like people of color from other countries can just relate to that just being the common narrative of a lot of other countries. Okay, so let's talk about the action, right? Starting to invest, actually, like, I guess 401ks are one of the biggest ways that a lot of people can kind of dip their toes into investing if their job, you know, offers a 401k, right? So
yep.
What do you have to say about that?
Well, I would say the reason the 401k is so powerful is because many companies offer it. Not all of them, but many do. And so there's a lower barrier to entry because all you have to do is sign up for it. Some of you are automatically enrolled right away, so you might already have access to this account. So it's just one fewer barrier to start investing. But also, you can make direct payroll contributions so that the money never even hits your bank account. And, you know, research just has shown the power of these automatic payroll contributions, because psychologically, when the money's not there, you won't spend it. And your quality of life won't meaningfully change. So it's kind of like this huge win-win where you're increasingly investing more and more of your money as you get promotions and raises year after year, and you're actively investing. So not only are you investing more of your money, but it's working for you and ideally growing at the same time. So 401ks and workplace retirement plans are so powerful for those reasons.
Yeah, honestly, I feel like if anybody's job, you know, offers a 401k, y'all need to go hit up human resources and sign up if they haven't gotten you to do it already when you first, you know, finish your 90-day probation or whatever probation that you have in the beginning. But what about the people that don't have Like, what about, you know, people who don't have a 401k or like they are independent contractors? I heard you say earlier something about an IRA Roth, right?
Yeah, Roth IRA or a traditional IRA. The IRA is essentially, it stands for Individual Retirement Arrangement. A lot of people say it's, you know, called an individual retirement account, but this account is set up so that you can save for retirement. And there's, for 2021, there's a $6,000 annual contribution limit, but basically you open one on your own. So you literally can just go to Google and type in how to open an IRA. You'll probably be taken to a website like Fidelity or Vanguard where you can set it up really quickly, and you can start to invest that way. Super easy, low entry at barriers to entry. So really do encourage for anyone who doesn't have a workplace retirement plan to really consider it. And, you know, as soon as you finish listening to this podcast, go on Google and just open that up and start investing.
And so, okay, so got it. So noted. Translation for people, for simpletons like me. So basically, you guys, if you don't have a 401k at your job, or if you're an independent contractor, or for whatever reason you just don't have access to a 401k through work, your next best bet is going to be opening up an IRA Roth on your own. And annually, you can contribute a max of $6,000 to that account, right?
That's correct. Yep. Okay. And it's called a Roth IRA. There's also a traditional. The difference between the two is just the way that taxes are handled. A lot of people, they freak out and they say, I don't know which one to open. So they don't open either one. Just pick one and go with it. I personally have a Roth IRA. You really can't go wrong with either. So just pick one. If you're unsure, just open a Roth IRA and just start investing. The most important thing is just starting.
Yeah. So I mean, I get it now, because like once I took the course, I was like, I understand what it means when people make such a big deal about maxing out their contribution limit. Before, like, people would post that and be like, I don't even know what that means, but like, you go do you, boo-boo. Like, I'm proud of you. But I mean, when you guys break down the math, if the annual contribution limit is $6,000, right? That's the most that you can put into this IRA Roth. That breaks down to like $500 a month on a 12-month calendar. So if you guys are looking at like, if you guys do your math with your income and you wind up seeing that you have an extra $500 to put away every single month, you can be in that position to open up a Roth IRA and max out that account annually. And I mean, not everyone's going to have, you know, that kind of income where they can put away $500 every single month, but it just kind of gives you an idea, right, of like how, like, the goal to like look forward towards when you are constantly putting away in your investment account on a regular basis. It doesn't have to be $500 a month. I'm not telling you guys, you know, that you have to do that if you're not in the position to, but even like,
you could start literally with as little as $20 a month.
Yeah,
you know, the $6,000 is the maximum, so you could finish the year with $1,000 in there, and guess what, it's not that you missed the maximum by $5,000, it's that you put in $1,000, whereas you normally might have put in zero, which is a huge win. So don't feel intimidated by that hurdle. You could start with very little, and something is better than nothing.
Yeah, so like, if you guys have automatic what is it, like savings on your bank accounts where, you know, like every week or something, you're putting like $50 away to your savings. Try that same tactic with your investment accounts. Like, can you put away like $50 every month or every week or whatever fits in your budget? Can you kind of challenge yourself and flex your budget so that you can put away extra money just on a regular basis? And then, you know, you might have like a holiday bonus or something, or you might get a pay raise at work where you find up where you wind up finding extra money that you can put away. I mean, like, really, just investing just boils down to, you know, do you feel more comfortable putting away money just like you are with savings? Because I know a lot of people, they don't feel comfortable with that routine practice of putting away money, right? It's the same thing with investing. It's just where you're putting the money. I thought it was funny because we were talking about like high yield investment accounts or high yield savings accounts. I remember that a couple of years ago, I opened up a high yield savings account because like I had I saved up a lot of money and I was like, I don't know what to do with it, but I'm going to try to do something responsible. So I like, instead of opening up an investment account, because I was telling myself for some reason, I had this belief that I was too young to have an investment account, because I only knew about 401k, or I only heard about like retirement accounts, and I didn't know enough. I just heard that like investing, you have to be a certain age, right? I don't even know where I got that from. So I opened up a high yield savings account, put all my money in there. And then, like, literally 6 months later, I was like, this is stupid. And I just took all my money out and just closed the account. So, I mean, you guys, if you wind up being in that position where you have, like, you save up this money and, you know, like, you don't know what to do with it, best thing to do is invest it. Don't do like me, please.
And the high yield savings accounts, actually, you know, it, like I said, it's not great for investing over long periods of time, but it is a great place to put your emergency fund. So I don't want everyone listening to say, well, I want to go close my high yield savings immediately. It is a great place to have your emergency fund and that stuff. But like Aline said, like if you're trying to invest and really, you know, create generational wealth, or, you know, invest for your retirement one day or for a child's education, you really need to be putting that in an investment account so you give yourself the best shot.
Got it. Okay, so everyone, don't listen to me then, because actually it was a good idea to have it in a high yield savings account, and I don't know what I'm talking about, so don't listen to me, listen to this guy. What do you think is gonna happen economy wise in like 2021? I feel like we are just a couple days in and now we have like this crazy riot, there's all this stuff, and that's just like, oh, we're only like a couple days in. What do you anticipate is going to happen?
That's a really good question. I wish I had all the answers. I think the things we do know are that we're having a new president, Joe Biden, starting this month. We know that the Senate is now controlled by Democrats, and the House of Representatives is as well. So we have a Democrat Congress, we have a Democrat president, and we do know that they believe a lot more in fiscal stimulus and, for example, direct payments than the previous administration. So one thing to expect is that, you know, there probably will be policies and things in place to help the working class a little bit more. We saw that the stock market did do better once Joe Biden was elected. And so I think the real, really big question mark is COVID. How are things going to change? I think people, you know, they really think if COVID can be put under control and the economy really opens up in a way where it was before the pandemic, then 2021 could be a really good, great year. Mm-hmm. At the same time, you know, shit could hit the fan and we could be saying, wow, 2021 was the worst year ever financially. So there's so much that can happen just because these are unprecedented times.
Okay. So, well, taking the latter scenario, if shit does hit the fan, how do we prepare for these things?
We prepare by saving more money than we ever have before. A lot of people just aren't in a position to save because they're on unemployment right now. They're out of work. But try to, if you don't have a source of income, try to generate a source of income as quickly as you can and save more than you ever have, because you will want that money for a rainy day in case things happen. If you do have a job and you are able to save, then start investing, and invest early and often, because you never know when you'll be glad you had that money.
Man, it sucks, because we're like, I'm like looking at you, for you guys are listening to the audio podcast, the audio version of the podcast. We're actually on video right now too, and I'm just staring at him like, come on, give us more optimistic advice. But it is true. It's like with the new administration, you know, and having more of like what is it, like the House and all that stuff, like more in like a Democratic control. It does feel like a hopeful situation, but I also am, you know, to the point, and I think a lot of people can say this, we're all to a point where we are just like exhausted and disappointed by our government, and we should do whatever we can to get closer to financial liberation. And I know that is like such a long stretch, and a very arduous, difficult journey for a lot of us. But now more than ever, during these unprecedented times, like, this should be a clear indicator that the government doesn't have her back, that you are going to be the only one that has your back at the end of the day. So we just need to prepare as much as possible. And I know there are a lot of people out there who, you know, like, they are just not into investing because they associate that with like really rich, evil, corrupt people. But, you know, like you had said, we have to participate, because we have to take care of ourselves first. Until we jump like a couple decades ahead, and we have like, and humanity has like surpassed greed, and we're like a collective, and like, you know, we've done away with like money and we're just like using the barter system, we have to take care of ourselves first. That's just the situation. So save where you can, when you can. Your bank account is going to sweat if it already isn't sweating like it is now. You know what I mean? It's going to be stressful. I wish I had a more optimistic answer to that question.
I mean, in terms of maybe more positive things, you know, interest rates are really low. So if you have a home that you've owned for a few years, consider refinancing the home so you could lock in a lower interest rate. That might be a more optimistic piece of advice. I would also say, you know, Warren Buffett always says, be cautious when people are aggressive and be aggressive when people are cautious. And there hasn't been really a true sustained stock market correction in several years. Correction just basically means when there's like some sort of crash that kind of brings prices more in line with the reality of the economy. And so the stock market has been doing really, really well for many years at this point, basically since the Great Recession. So, you know, we could be ready. And if that happens, you know, potentially you'll be in a place where you can invest more aggressively. I personally don't try to time the market. So I invest in a regular cadence all the time, regardless of what the market's doing, because I don't know when the market's going to go up or down. And something, you know, you can miss out on some very good performance days if you're on the sidelines just waiting for the right moment. But, you know, that's maybe a piece of advice that maybe could be more optimistic and looking for a silver lining and potentially what we're seeing macroeconomically.
So you mentioned about like timing the market. I feel like that would be like a common thing that a lot of people are doing if they're investing on their own, right? Because I feel like in some scenarios, like where I have like walked into like a really like swanky rich party and I've like heard a bunch of like rich men, like this is a true story, I actually walked into a swanky party and there was a bunch of rich men and I heard them discussing and they were saying like, oh, like is the market good to invest right now? And it sounded to me kind of like timing the market, right?
Totally.
And that's, to my knowledge, like that's not a good idea if you're like investing on your own without like help, right?
Correct. So timing the market is, so that people know what we're talking about, is basically when you decide, make an investment decision based off how you think the market's going to perform in the future. So you might think today the market is really high, so I'm going to wait until it goes low to invest. So I might sell when it's high so I can buy when it's low and vice versa. And the research shows that when the average investor tries to time the market, they obviously can't predict the future. So they end up performing worse than people who don't do that and who just invest on a regular cadence over time. One, because when you time the market and you're buying and selling, you incur potential taxable events where you have to pay taxes, so you'll end up lagging. And also because if you miss out on just a few very important days when there are a ton of gains, you'll miss out on the majority of the returns of the stock market. So most people don't realize, for example, that when you look at historical returns over a 20-year period, the majority of the positive returns of the stock market occur on just a few handful days where there's just incredible outsized returns, basically these outlier days in which the stock market just kills it. And if you miss out on just a handful of those days where the market just like disproportionately does extremely well, you're going to really, really, really hurt your returns, like really hurt your returns. It's hard to overemphasize that. And so that's why I really will caution people to not try to time the market, because if it goes well, you got lucky and you'll start to mistake your luck for skill and knowledge, and you'll probably keep doubling down until you basically get burned. And so just the research shows that you'll more than likely underperform the market by trying to do that.
So you'll lose more money that way, basically, huh?
Yeah, you won't get your fair share of stock market returns, essentially.
So if you were 22-year-old me, if you were in that swanky get-together and you saw those rich men talking about timing the market, what would you have said to them if you were me?
Oh, man. I would have said, of course, now is the right time to invest. But in terms of what would you have actually said to them?
You're stupid? Like,
well, no. Well, on the one hand, I'd say, like, well, you guys are silly because timing the market isn't going to end up working out in your favor. But really, I would, on the other hand, it's like, if the question is now the right time to invest? The answer is yes, because it's always the right time to invest, because since you shouldn't be timing the market, you should always be investing. So maybe I wouldn't say anything out loud, but in my head, I'd be thinking, like, these guys are just full of shit. Like, they don't know what they're talking about. They think that, you know, they've probably gotten lucky before and they attribute it to their own skill, but because they got lucky once, that like is all because of their hard work and their skill, rather than just like perhaps that, you know, they just were fortunate.
They were just lucky. Big common theme, I feel like, in the finance world is that people don't realize that the reality is that they're just lucky. They were dealt a good hand. And they always want to attribute it to, oh, well, I'm just super smart. I'm super resourceful. I worked super hard. And that is why I am in the position that I'm in.
Yeah, well, you know, I was going to say in investing, there's this survivorship bias where you only hear about the people that did really well. You only hear the stories about the people who invested in Bitcoin when it was worth like $5 and bought a bunch of it and became super rich. Mm-hmm. You don't hear about the people who did the same thing and invested at the top of the bubble and then lost all their money and yeah, you know, had to move back in with their parents because they're broke and like it ruined their life. And it's the same thing in the stock market. You hear about the people who did really well and they'll go online and social media and brag, and I bought Tesla and look at me, and I bought Amazon stock at the right time. You don't hear about all the people who are, you know, people don't go on Instagram to celebrate when they messed up or when they lost. And so that, I just want to remind people of that. For every person that you see who's, you know, going online to brag about how they're killing and their investments are doing this and that, just remember that there's someone else who was on the other side of those trades who lost. Mm-hmm. And so just keep that in mind. And that's why, you know, don't time the market, invest on a regular basis, especially if you're investing over a 20, 30, 40, 50 year time horizon. You don't even need to be checking how the market's doing that often. Just consistently invest. Don't get so caught up in the ups and downs of fluctuations, because it'll basically all smooth out over time, and just keep investing. That's the most important thing you can do. And for most people, the way they're going to make the majority of their money is through work, right? So the stock market performance sounds like a distraction to your life. Just keep investing on a regular basis and just focus on the things that matter, which are making sure you're doing a good job at work so you can progress in your career and really secure the bag. And then spend your time focusing on your loved ones and being present and really making the most of your personal time, because those are the things that are really going to, at the end of the day, really enrich your life.
So basically, don't overcomplicate investing. Just keep it simple. Donate to my investment. contribute to, you know, your investment on a recurring basis. And then don't time the market. So don't be risky, you guys. Just be consistent. Totally. Basically, that's it.
Totally.
I really thought there was so much more. Like, I mean, there granted, there is a little bit more, but.
Yeah, there is. I would say like the biggest one of these all, I think like the biggest high level lesson is don't pick individual stocks. You know, that's a big part of the course, is explaining why that's the case and how to go about choosing the right indexes and ETFs and mutual funds and all that stuff. But I think if people really internalize those lessons that you just spoke about, they'll be far ahead of 99% of other people who are investing in the market.
Mm. So basically, this is simple, and there's a lot more. I mean, like it's interesting, because I don't want to say it's like simple, like it's easy to understand, I guess, right? But there is more to it, and this is I learned more of the secrets, you guys. I learned all the investment hacks and all the fun stuff in the course. So if you guys want to learn more and, you know, enroll in the course, I'm leaving a link to the course in the show notes. But I feel like we covered a lot. We talked about a lot today, didn't we?
We did, but it was really fun.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad. It was really nice to pick your brain. I feel like the world of investing is just such a scary and intimidating place for a lot of people. You're the first person that I have met that has just like really made it approachable, simple, and like not intimidating. So for those of you who want to follow Camilo and the Finance Twins, where can we find you online?
So you can find us primarily on Instagram, at The Finance Twins, and on our website, thefinancetwins.com. We have so many articles and helpful tips and things to really help you start your financial journey. And then also, if you want to take the course that Eileen took on how to start investing, and I want to give you 25% off the course with the code BALLERS25, BALLERS 25. So please do check out the course. She said she'll link to it in the notes. Make 2021 your year. Like I said before, you can do it.
You can do it, you guys, even though it feels like you can't. You'd be surprised. We made it through 2020. We can do it again for 2021. New levels, new doubles. So that's it for today. If you guys liked this episode, share it to your Instagram stories, tag us, let us know what you think. And that is it for today's episode. We will see you in the next one. Thanks for tuning into today's episode. If you enjoyed this one, please leave us a review on iTunes so we can keep producing more episodes for you to listen to. And the conversation doesn't end here. If you had any great takeaways from today that you'd like to share, post it on Instagram and tag me at @theballeronabudget so we can chat. Follow me on Insta if you haven't already, or subscribe to my newsletter at www.theballerandabudget.com so we can stay connected. We'll be back with another episode soon. But until then, keep ballin', baller fam.